everybody, and welcome to Ultimate Despair Reprise After Class. Ladies and gentlemen, and every variant in between, I have a very special guest with us today. Introduce yourself for the universe.
Hello, universe. I am Sean Chiplock, also known online as @SonicMega. I am a professional voice actor, and what did you say? What's the full name of the show again?
Ultimate Despair Reprise, because it's a Danganronpa thing.
What system was that Kingdom Hearts game on?
Well, I mean, I think it was a bunch of 3DS games, but we had to start on like a phone or something. It was on like three Java phones.
Was it like one of those like crossover games in Japan between Danganronpa and Kingdom Hearts?
What is that clicking?
That's me stirring my tea.
Right, because you've been back on that grind. Bronchitis sounds rough, especially when you're a voiceover artist.
Bronchitis as a voice actor is absolute garbage because you have to cough. You need to cough in order to get the phlegm out of your throat and out of your chest and your lungs. If you don't cough, it's never going to leave. But when you cough, you are destroying your throat. Like, there were a couple mornings while I was taking the antibiotics where I would wake up, cough several times, usually the second to last time would have a little bit of blood come up, and then throw up a bit, and then I'd be good to go. And that was just how my morning started.
Yeah, it reminds me of a time I got like really sick when I was delivering pizzas, and it was like I threw up, and I was like, well, I feel a little better now.
The only other time I had all of that happen in the same time span was when I started playing Sonic 2006.
Yeah, I remember playing, Sean, I remember playing that at a kiosk at a GameStop, like, back in the day.
And no wonder they went out of business.
Yeah, right? We were playing the demo to Sonic 2006 or whatever, and just at one point, a random box just, like, flew behind us and pegged us in the back of the head. It was very unpleasant. That game is just so... that game's a lot. Speaking of games, did you just see that? We're gonna date this instantly, but I gotta talk about this to somebody. Did you see that Joker announcement for Smash?
I am aware of it now, and I've like got the trailer or whatever, the update video open on a separate tab, but I literally just got home, so I have not had the chance to watch it yet.
It's pretty good. Mass Destruction is back, baby.
Oh man. I'm scared. Just seeing what people have tweeted about the character. Apparently he has a limit break like Cloud, and he has a counter.
Yes. He has, at one point during the trailer, I think Morgana says, wait a minute, they have a counter and a reflect? Is that even fair?
That's great. That's amazing.
Yep. It's incredible. Anyway, I got a couple questions for you. I've come prepared with questions.
I may have come prepared with answers. I'm not sure. We'll find out. The answers...
Yeah, we're just going to...
They may or may not line up with the questions.
Well, we're gonna go on this journey together. We're just gonna. So one of the biggest projects that you worked on recently was Legend of Zelda: Breath of the Wild. Like this, that was kind of where I became like more aware of you actually as an actor. And so considering that like the past of Legend of Zelda voice work has been associated with shit like, you know, my boy and stuff like that, was there a pressure to like get it right?
For Breath of the Wild?
Yes.
There was absolutely that kind of pressure, mainly because the only other known Legend of Zelda game that had voiceover to that degree, besides just basic grunts and efforts, was the CDI games. And as we all know, they are embraced for perhaps not all the best reasons.
They're hilarious.
Right. But maybe not as hilarious by Nintendo's standards. So I knew that since that was the only comparison within the IP that people would have, obviously it was immediately going to be scrutinized and compared to those games. So as excited as I was to be a part of that franchise, I was also horrifically scared. Because I did not want to be part of the reason why people looked at the dub and went, oh my god, it's just the CDI games all over again. This is why the Legend of Zelda games should never have voiceover. So I was very determined at the time to just not necessarily get it right, but at least get the performance that was in my head out and onto the microphone. I wasn't really in the mood to celebrate or fanboy or really give myself any hurrahs until the job was done, or more so until the game was out there and I could see what the public at large thought of the work.
Right. And I mean, I certainly enjoyed your performance as Revald. Ravioli.
Chef Boyardee.
So, and you did a couple other like roles in that game. What was it like just in general working on that game? Like, what kind of headspace did you get into when it came to voicing that character?
Revali was definitely the most stressful of the three, mentally. It was interesting because each of the characters had a different kind of experience for me. Revali, I thought, was going to be the easiest character. I thought he was going to have the personality that I was going to click into the easiest, and just be able to fly through his lines, no pun intended. But because of the difference in personality between what I had in mind and what Nintendo of America was going for, we essentially ended up having to start from square one, and that really threw me for a loop. Like, it worried me so much. Go ahead.
I was just going to say, well, like, what was Nintendo expecting?
Well, it wasn't a huge change. It's like, generally when we're talking about characters who are very cocky or self-confident, there's two major types. There's the types that have a good reason to be self-confident, who really are the best and they truly believe it. And then there's the cocky that are just trying to convince everyone else around them that they are the best. And what I came to understand after the DLC content is, no, Revali really did earn the right to be considered the best. He put all of that work in. And that's what Nintendo was going for, which was the, I really am the best and I've earned the right to be respected. Versus Japan, which did lean a little harder on the stereotypical, you know, even though he earned it, he is very flagrant about it. He's very obvious and obtuse about it. So I was kind of going for what the Japanese side ended up being, whereas Nintendo wanted that other side. And getting into that more nuanced self-confidence was difficult for me at first. It was very, very stressful. And I ended up leaning on my director a lot to help guide me to where I needed to be. And we got there. And once I got there, I was much more comfortable. But it was harrowing. There was a point where I was concerned that I was not going to be able to give Revali the performance that I knew he deserved. So he was definitely the most stressful. In contrast, Teba was just one and done. He was a case where when they brought up his character specs and a sample scene, in my head, I already knew exactly what he sounded like. And I said, I said as much. I said, I think I know exactly what he sounds like to me. And they said, show us. So I did some sample lines and they completely agreed. So Teba was, if Revali was a case where what I had in mind was not on model with what they wanted, Teba was a case where I presented what I thought was his personality. They completely agreed. And what you hear in the game is basically what I came up with 100%. Like, Teba's voice is my pure creation. They just approved it and tweaked it where needed with the delivery. And then Deku.
That's really cool.
Yeah.
That's cool.
I'm very proud of that. And then Deku Tree was just, he was the most challenging physically because he was a very, very, very low tone for me at the time. Probably the closest to my deep baritone that I can hit without forcing like a monster style deepness. And the only way I was able to stay consistent in the character voice was if I relaxed my entire body. I couldn't tense my shoulders. I couldn't like stand in a pose that tightened up my muscles because it prevented my throat from just being relaxed enough for me to pull a lot of air from my diaphragm, from my stomach. So I had to just, unlike a wooden tree, I had to be very free-flowing and very relaxed in order to hit the level of baritone that I needed for the character.
You need to be like a very tiny tree that could sway in the wind rather than a big oak tree that is stable.
Right. Or like tree sap, just very, very slow and molassy and delicious and traps bugs.
Traps bugs, and then like a million years someone makes a theme park based on whatever bug is in there.
Right.
You know, it's so funny, like whenever I've done these interviews with other voice actors or just voice actors in general, is that they don't really talk like lot of people forget about the physicality aspect of the performance, and it sounds rather intense. Were there other roles that you got to kind of just like put your own take on it and you were really proud of that?
The one that I definitely bring up the most is my performance as Zenk from Fairy Fencer F. Because one of my early inspirations when I got into voiceover, I told people if I could have the range of Kari Wahlgren, the humility of Steve Bloom, and the intensity and rawness of Liam O'Brien, that I would never have a day in my life where I didn't work. And Zenk was the first case where I had this bloodthirsty, you know, vengeful, crazy character. And as far as the director was concerned, the more bloodthirsty and manic I sounded, the better the character sounded. So, you know, you talk about physicality. That was absolutely a case where each time I delivered the lines, you know, my body was super tense. I was curling my fingers in on themselves, like I was trying to grip someone's throat. I had my mouth wide open, my teeth flaring, my eyes wide open. I went full bore into it. And it took a lot of my energy, but it made the character so fun to play. And I think it shows, especially if you go to some of his earliest scenes, just how in the moment he is in his maniacal quest for bloodshed. You know, I really felt it. I had a lot of fun with it, and I think a lot of people will be able to sense that in the performance.
Yeah, honestly, I like just hearing you talk about it, I really now just want to find a copy of it and give that a try, because that sounds pretty spectacular. So, as you say yourself on Twitter, you're a big fan of dungeon crawlers. What are a couple of your favorites in the genre?
So, most of my absolute favorites ended up being on the Vita, because
Hey, Vita gang.
Yeah. I was only introduced to the Vita because of my brief time at NIS America as a QA tester. Because one of the first games that I tested, besides the European release of Etrian Odyssey 4, which I was already familiar with that game when it released in the US, one of the first games I was in charge of testing was a game called Demon Gaze for PlayStation Vita. And basically, QA testing there introduced me not only to the world of dungeon crawlers besides Etrian Odyssey, but also to the Vita itself. And when I realized that I had access to more of this genre through this console, and especially I learned while I was at the company during the time that I worked there, was when Sony was talking about how they were discontinuing the original model Vitas that had the OLED sharp contrast screens. And the new models were going to have the regular LED screens that had soft contrast, kind of closer to what the 3DS does. And I didn't like that because, you know, the 3DS, you know, whites aren't really white, blacks aren't really black because they fuse into the nearby colors, whereas the Vita screens had very sharp contrast. White was white, black was black, etc. So when I found out about that, I immediately went out and I ordered, you know, one of the last new copies of the old Vita. So now I owned it and I ended up, you know, wanting to play a lot of the games that I QA tested. So I got introduced to Demon Gaze. I got introduced to Operation Babel, Operation Babel and Operation Abyss.
I was trying to remember it myself, but you said it before I could come up with it.
It's not necessarily a dungeon crawler, but the Criminal Girls series, which is actually a really nicely made RPG game. It has fan service elements, but like I tell people, there are fan service games with RPG elements, and then there's RPG games with fan service elements, and Criminal Girls is one of the latter. It actually has a really unique battle system, and as in the first game especially, I liked the developments of the different characters. It was fun. I had a lot of fun with it. But Etrian Odyssey is definitely the big one. Ever since I played Etrian Odyssey 4, which was my introduction to the series, I was instantly hooked. I beat
that. Four was my. I am currently going through my another play of four right now. Actually, yeah, EO4 rules, and I really want to get, I think Nexus just came out.
Yeah, Nexus came out, I think, in February, mainly because I logged, when Nexus came out, I logged every single day on Twitter, just a brief summary of the progress that I had made in the game, with the goal of being done before the 20th of March, because that's when Chocobo Mystery Dungeon came out. And right. I did beat that goal. I think I finished it on like the 15th or the 17th or something like that. It was pretty close. But then
Chocobo Mystery Dungeon came out, and you voice a character in that, right?
Yes. I voice a couple, actually. I voice Mayor Gale, who's probably the most consistent. I voice I forget what his name, but he's the fishmonger in town. He's the guy that you sell all the fish that you've caught to. And I also voice one of the bosses, Alexander, who's like the mechanical dude who's in the light tower, I believe. Yes. So.
Right.
Yeah.
So do you get a kick like voicing characters from this genre that you have such an affection for?
It's interesting because that's a question I've only recently been able to answer. Because until Chocobo Mystery Dungeon came out, there wasn't really a case where a game had come out that I voiced in that was a genre that I would play. Like, you know, I was in Fire Emblem Echoes, I think it was Echoes. But
yeah, that was the more recent one.
Yeah,
I think Echoes of whatever. Yeah,
but I'd never or Shadows of Valentia or something like that. Mm-hmm, But I'd never really been a fan of that type of turn-based strategy game. And you know, my big thing, like I said, was certain RPGs or dungeon crawlers, and it just didn't happen to have a game that I voiced in that I also would have enjoyed playing. So Chocobo Mystery Dungeon was a nice change of pace, and Mary Skelter was a nice change of pace as well, because that is a dungeon crawler. And while I didn't voice a main character in that, you know, I did voice a character named Mamoru, and a second character named Hitsuka. Mamoru being one of the fellow prisoners in the early dungeon that the player helps out, and Hitsuka being the assistant to Lady Ohime, who's basically the leader of the church that you visit several times. So I did play as recurring characters in the game, and it was really interesting getting to hear myself in a dungeon crawler. I haven't hit my actual... No, I have now. My main goal for a long time was that I wanted to be a party member in a dungeon crawler. I didn't want to just be an NPC. I wanted to be someone who you brought with you into the dungeon and who had their own sayings for when they attacked, when they took damage, you know, when they died, when they were healed. Someone who you could bring with you from the start of the game to the end of the game and leveled up alongside you. And I kind of got there with the recent release of Zonki Zero Last Beginning, which came out very recently. I think it was like last week or something like that.
Yeah, it was like, I think my partner, she was like playing the demo for that like 2 weeks ago or something like that. It was very, it was so funny. At a Danganronpa photo shoot that I was part of, there was a Zonki Zero cosplayer there. So like, there was just the one, but like, yeah, that game's very, very recent.
So I voiced the child version of Zen Kubota in the game. And it's one of three forms, because there's the child, the teen, the adult, and the old man. So that's why I say partial, because I'm not always there. I'm only there when you have Zen Kubota as a child before he ages up. But it counts. Well, it counts, goddammit.
Yes, it does. It's like, one of my personal dreams is like, I at one point either want to voice a monster that gets like, it like gets her ass kicked by a Blue Ranger in a Power Rangers show, or something like that. I would love that.
I actually got to do that. I got to voice several boss monsters for the Power Rangers Mega Force game for 3DS. But it
that's cool.
Yeah, it didn't score very well. And my main excitement about voicing that game was because my younger stepbrother was always crazy about Power Rangers, like absolutely nuts about it. And I was so excited about getting to tell him that I was now the voice of several, you know, bad guys in a Power Rangers game. But by the time it came out, when I excitedly told him, his response was, "So, Power Rangers is for babies."
Oh,
it broke my heart.
The new game that came out, Battle for the Grid, is cool, though. Definitely.
I saw Sonic Box was posting combo videos.
Yeah, it was ridiculous. I was watching some of the streams. Like, actually, a good friend of mine worked on that game, and I just, when I saw it, I was like, wow, they're making a real-ass fighting game here. They're they're doing it. They're finally doing it.
There are some areas where it's basic, but it's clear that there was at least a solid understanding of fighting game foundations in its creation.
Like, the fact, like, yeah, like, definitely on the stream, like, Yipes got, like, really into it, and Clockwork was, like, showing off some combos, and it's like, all right, this game seems all right. So, shifting gears a little bit, this is something I've been thinking about. You also voiced Yuki Mishima in Persona 5, and that, like, I scrolled through your Twitter feed before this, and you were just retweeting all those hilarious edits. Do you have a, like, what was it like voicing Yuki, actually?
Yuki Mishima was pretty interesting. So he was equal parts stuff I was familiar with and stuff I wasn't as familiar with. The stuff I was familiar with was obviously his more jovial, good-natured, helpful side after he gets, you know, brought back from the brink. Mainly because I think that's part of why I was asked to participate in the game and play the role, was because I had familiarity with that type of character personality. But it was interesting getting to play the side of him that was very vulnerable, that was literally abused, that was shy and introverted and distrusting of people, mainly because it's not something I've played very often. But it was a good challenge. It was a good new experience for me, one that I think I did fairly well. The only area where I feel like I could have improved, towards the end of the game, you know, there's parts where Mishima is cheering very loudly for the Phantom Thieves, and his voice for me was in that higher pitch range. So trying to hit that volume, that projection level, without my voice cracking or falling out was relatively difficult, and I don't think I managed to perfect it for all of the takes in the later part of the game. But I just see it as a learning experience, you know? It's something for me to reflect on, for me to practice going forward so that I can try and find that sweet spot where I can do that voice without straining myself too much. But yeah, he was a good character. There are some roles that it's just 100% stuff that I'm already aware of and can just breeze through. There are characters where each line can be a struggle from time to time. And Mishima was a nice mix of both. You know, there were times where I got to have fun, and there were times where I had to dig down and pull from my experience as an actor and tackle something new just based off of my prior knowledge.
Yeah, I certainly liked like your depiction of the Mishima character. I have a particular affection for that character. And also, real quick, if your rebellious spirit flared and you rip off a mask and you cry out the words "Fursona," what is the fursona that comes out of you, Sean?
The persona or the fursona?
The fursona. You heard me right the first
time. Oh man, I gotta think about this. Okay.
I could tell you mine while you think about it.
Okay, fine, go ahead.
It's just like a fox with a really, really big fluffy tail that people could take a nap on.
Oh, that's so classic. You know? It's so simple. The cuddle tail, it's so important.
It's very important, yeah.
Now are you saying if I as Mishima did that and ripped off the mask, or if I as Sean Chiplock ripped off
the mask? As Sean Chiplock ripped off the mask.
Oh god. Oh man. this is a toughie. You know, I feel like the mask wouldn't actually rip off. It would just extend down my face and turn into a beak, and then I would become a bird.
That's great. I love it.
I'll call it my fursonka. that's my persona name is Bird of Prey.
That's good.
Preysona.
So what was it like recording for Ishimaru? You had mentioned some, you know, challenging roles in the past. What was it like for you to voice Ishimaru? Like, was it tough to like stay in that high register, because he seems like he's constantly
honestly shouting? No, and Kiyotaki Ishimaru is one of those cases where I tell people I always find something to take from each of my roles in terms of a lesson, whether it was something I was familiar with or something new that I had to try out, or some new technique that I had to use. And that's also true for Kiyotaki Shimaru. You know, it was important to be able to maintain that breath control. But Kiyotaka was definitely at that point in my career what I would have considered an easy role, quote unquote. And that was because, getting into this career, I already had a very high level of natural energy. I was already very loud and boisterous. And I didn't really have any issues with projecting. So because that was kind of my default for performing, when I was at a point in my career where I could stand to learn how to be more nuanced, how I could stand to be less loud, less obvious. Kiyotaki Shimaru was a character who didn't need to be subtle. He was, you know, very stout in his search for justice. He was very loud in his declarations, very forceful in his assertments. And so it was very easy for me to fall into that character and fall into that type of performance. So for where I was in my career at the time, he was not a difficult character to voice. I am glad now that my skill set has expanded beyond that. But yeah, at the time, he was definitely a character that I just more so got to have fun with, because what he required was something I'd already been doing in my amateur years as well.
Yeah, that's dope. Like, what kind of so you mentioned you got to have a lot of fun with Kiyotaka. Like, what kind of headspace were you in when you recorded that role?
What kind of headspace was I in when I recorded for Kiyotaka?
Yes.
You know, it really boiled down to, you know, you mentioned method acting earlier. For me, a lot of getting into a character involves method acting. So like I said with Zank, you know, I was curling the fingers, my face was scrunched up or super wide. For a character that I did for Aegis of Earth, because he was kind of like the, almost like the Lupin the Third space dandy type of cool character, I often had my hand like scratching behind my head, like he was trying to lays back and take things easy, just kind of relax and unwind. And for Kiyotaki Ishimaru, you know, it was standing very straight up with, you know, one hand doing a salute on my forehead, the other hand, you know, taut against the fist held tight against the lower part of my back, puffing the chest out. It was really just taking on the pose of the character, or sometimes literally imitating the pose that he would have had in the game, did most of the work of getting myself in the right headspace to perform that character.
Right. And was that the same for when you voiced Monotaro for V3?
So Monotaro was interesting because he was less about... There was some physicalization, and I'll describe that in a second. Monotaro was interesting because... he was a hybrid. When they described him to me, they said, we want the Mono Cubs to be sort of like animated dolls, not necessarily actual bear cubs, not necessarily living creatures, but we want to get the feel that there's something off about them, that they are sentient, but they're not really alive. Excuse me. So, what I did to get into that character voice was, because he was very, you know, high-pitched, similar to Monokuma, I borrowed the voice that I did for Fatigue from an animated series called The Bedfellows. And if you've ever heard him before, Fatigue is very, you know, he's very high-pitched, he's very energetic, he's also got a British accent. And what I did was I removed the British accent, because we needed American accents for the game, and instead of giving him that cutesy, effeminate, affectionate flair that Fatigue has, I replaced it with that stilted Five Nights at Freddy's moving animatronic effect. And so that's the main difference between Fatigue and Monotaro. Is Fatigue is high-pitched, affectionate, and enthusiastic. Monotaro is high-pitched, staccato, and...
not quite right.
And forced smile. Does that make sense?
Yeah, it's like he's like, you bring up, you know, Five Nights at Freddy's, and I think about like who the guy who voices like the Funtime Fredbear, and how he voices that character of like, you know, there's something stilted and wrong. It's like, it's not a recording, but it's like, it's, yeah, it's bizarre, but right. Like I think it definitely worked for Monotaro.
Right.
Yeah. That was great. So, who or what inspires you as an artist?
Well, early on, like I said, there were a couple specific professional voice actors that I looked up to for specific facets of their performances, specific reasons or aspects of their career that I wanted to take from, borrow from. But I've learned over time that in a career where, I don't want to say you have so much competition, where you hear so much of the same people over and over and over again playing certain archetypes, it really isn't a cop-out to say that it's worth finding inspiration in everybody who you're working alongside or who you're also auditioning for a certain character against. Because at the end of the day, only one person's going to book the role, and there's going to be a reason why they booked the role. And understanding your strengths as an actor and understanding what approach to take to an audition depends on a whole lot of factors. It depends on the character description. It depends on the person directing the project, because different directors will have different styles that they prefer. It depends on the studio that's producing it, because the studio itself may focus on specific types of games. So not only do you have to understand the client atmosphere that you are reading for, you also should spend lots of time researching those who booked the roles either that you were going for or who are booking the types of roles that you want to get in the future. Because every actor is going to have a unique style. Every actor is going to have their own way of doing something. And even if you aren't able to perfectly replicate a voice that you hear in a project, the process of trying to reach that voice may lead you to discover something unique to your style that you can use to your advantage. So it's fine to have idols that got you into the career in the first place, but I strongly recommend that the deeper you get into the industry, the wider you set your radar, and the more sources of inspiration basically just widen your horizons, be willing to take in more examples and listen to more performances and see what elements you can borrow and work into your own skill set.
Absolutely. I believe Chuck Jones would always tell his animation students, like, you can't just, you know, copy the cartoons and like features that you really like. You got to get out there into the world and be inspired by other things.
Mm-hmm.
Because that's what like allows you to thrive as an artist. One last question for you. If you could send one message to the world that would be perfectly understood by everyone everywhere, what would that be?
One message that would be instantly understood by everyone in the world.
Yep, no matter the language, cultural barrier, whatever, just one message that everybody would understand intuitively.
The sound of a very long urination after an extended road trip. Because nothing in the world is more relaxing than when you finally get to empty your bladder after 8 to 12 hours of being on the road. And I'm sure anyone who has ever done that could listen to that audio and instantly understand the relief behind it.
Damn, it's true. It's true. I'm thinking about it now. It's like, yep. I used to have to drive for like 4 hours to get to my old college. So, yep. All right. Well, Sean, it has been an absolute pleasure. Is there anything you would like to plug or encourage people to check out before we head out?
Definitely my most active source of social media is my Twitter, which, as I said, is at Sonic Mega. That's where most of my day-to-day postings go. That's where pretty much all of my voiceover role reveals happen first when I'm allowed to talk about them. That is also exclusively where I hold raffles for the projects that I've voiced in. Whenever an anime series whether it's a collection of episodes or more often a video game comes out that I voiced in, almost every single time I raffle off at least one copy of the game for free. And all it costs you is just be following my account, answer the question that I tweet, which is usually themed or related to the game project, and you get entered in. And if you win, I cover the game cost, I cover the shipping. It's absolutely free for you. So it's a nice way to get rewarded for helping support me in my career.
All right. Well, Sean, it has been an absolute pleasure. I really appreciate you taking some time out of your day to sit down with us. I hope your voice starts feeling better.
Yeah, I'm definitely going to be chugging tea and minimizing my talking the rest of tonight for sure.
All right. Well, I really appreciate it.
Yeah. Thank you for your time.
Yeah, absolutely. And everyone else, class dismissed.